Thank you. You're a hearty crowd coming out after lunch and not going back to the room and napping. All right. I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Drs. Trenton Roberts and Jeremy Ross. Today, my topic, I'm going to update you on our quest to develop continuous critical potassium concentrations during reproductive growth for soybeans. We're interested in this for numerous reasons. You know, we get samples in throughout the summer at all types of different growth stages. We know that plants, they develop dry matter at different times that causes some nutrients to accumulate, some to dilute. We have the dynamics of vegetative versus reproductive growth phases. And, you know, this causes leaf nutrient concentrations, or at least for some nutrients, to change across time. And when you look in the textbooks or the literature, typically there are only one or two growth stages that provide critical nutrient concentrations for each crop. Potassium for us in Arkansas, our soybeans are quite responsive to, especially the soybeans that are grown on silt and sandy loam soils. So, you know, our quest here is to develop something like the inset that is shown on the right-hand side, which came from the old cotton petiole nutrient monitoring program that was very popular in Arkansas during the 70s and 80s for really monitoring nitrate, but they also monitored a few other nutrients. But you can see on the x-axis is time during reproductive growth stage, and on the y-axis is petiole nitrate concentration. And you have an upper and a lower limit that defines your sufficiency range and your deficiency. So this is kind of what we're shooting for, to be able to monitor or troubleshoot potassium in our soybeans in Arkansas. We know from our research plots that we can have significant yield increases where we see absolutely no potassium deficiency symptoms during the past year. This past summer, we had plots that produced in the mid-70s to upper 70 bushels with potassium, showed no potassium deficiency symptoms until really they reached late R6, early R7 stage, and the no-K plots started to senesce earlier than where we had potassium. But yet there was about an 8 to 10 bushel yield response in those trials. The other reason here is really from an educational standpoint, and I think this is going on across all crop producing areas, but we have our farm service providers that are taking tissue samples from grower fields, submitting them to a lab for analysis, and they are getting back these very aesthetically pleasing reports that clearly can interpret, and not only interpret, but recommend nutrients based on the tissue analysis. And I took the name off of this so that I don't pick on anybody, but I really challenge whether a quart of locomotive and 1 to 2 quarts of fullback for magnesium are going to cause a corn crop in the early reproductive stage to increase its yield. Even though, you know, again, this tissue analysis here is suggesting that both potassium and magnesium are deficient. So we just want to develop better recommendations, and we think for something like potassium that is frequently deficient, this should be a fairly easy task, and I'm not sure why, you know, we haven't done this in more crops. Back in 2012, one of my former students started working on soybeans, and basically, you know, we found that tissue potassium concentration peaked in soybean at the R2 growth stage and declined at a very predictable and linear rate during reproductive growth. And that rate was very similar across planting dates, maturity groups, and potassium fertilization levels. And so that kind of developed the concept, and I'll show you some of this in a minute, of where we're going. And we actually, in the publication that you see, we tried to validate that, but when we were ready to publish, we only had a very limited amount of data to validate that concept. And, you know, we lacked a couple of other pieces of information. The literature is pretty sketchy about how late you can apply potassium to many crops, including soybean, and still gets significant yield increases. And, you know, we're not even talking about economics right now. We're talking agronomics. We'll put the economics to it when we get the data. And the last thing here that we really need to make an improvement on from what we published is we've got to have a better starting point to base that recommendation. You saw in the cotton petiole nutrient monitoring, it was weeks after the first flower. So here, you know, we started our decline in tissue concentration beginning at R2 stage. So we really need to improve on that to be able to predict better. The other thing that we need to be clear about, because when you look in the literature, you'll find a lot of references and research that has looked at that soybean leaf concentrations for potassium. Very specifically, you know, we're sampling a trifoliate leaf on the upper portion of the plant that is a mature leaf, and we are separating the panicle from the trifoliate leaflet. Okay, some research you have to pay very close attention and hope that they paid detail in writing the methods, but some protocols call for submitting both the petiole and the leaflet together for analysis. And if you look, this again is from Parvez et al. Petiole is the two insets on the bottom. Trifoliate leaflet are shown on the top. And basically the left and right is either a linear trend line put through the same data points as a quadratic on the right. But the main thing I want you to look at here is the fact that the y-axis scale, both on the top and bottom, are the same, and it shows that during early reproductive growth, the petiole contains more than twice as much potassium as the trifoliate leaflet, but it declines at a faster rate. By the time you get to late reproductive growth, the petiole and the leaflet may contain similar concentrations, or the petiole may actually be slightly lower. So it's very important that we establish exactly what tissue sample or tissue we need to sample and analyze. So that brings me to a very brief materials and methods here. So the first thing that we did, again, we had to figure out how to age the soybean plant. And about the time that Russell Parvez was finishing up, Larry Purcell's group, plant physiologist, with soybean there at the University of Arkansas, who had led a project with many of the surrounding states, had released a program called SoyMap. And one of the things that that SoyMap program does is it takes the maturity group and the planting date and your geographic location, and it predicts when the R1 or blooming is going to occur. Another program from Mississippi State that had been released, I think, several years earlier, called SoyPheno, which is available online. The SoyMap is an Excel program that you can get for free. But anyway, those two programs predict very similar, when you enter the same information, predict very similar R1 stages. And I've looked around, and I think there's some other programs in the Midwest that essentially do the same thing in predicting when reproductive growth is going to start. So the data set that I'm going to show you today has over 250 mean concentrations, and they are throughout reproductive growth, and that includes five cultivar site years from 2014 and 2016. We have five cultivar site years to add from 2017, but those are not included in what I'm going to show you. And what we did here, the site years that we have are the ones in the dark print on the table on the right-hand side. You can see the planting date, the cultivar, and the predicted R1 growth stage from SoyMap and SoyPheno. So what we did, we took all of our observations, divided them into 7-day intervals during reproductive growth, and then we fit a linear or quadratic curve to that data and predicted, used that equation to predict 90 and 95% relative yield. And this, again, includes several sites, several cultivars, and multiple potassium rates to get multiple potassium fertility levels. We then took the series of time points and fit a quadratic or a cubic model to it. We'll eventually use multiple regression for this, but this is kind of a shortcut method for this presentation. So if we take all that data and plot it, and these are just a couple of crude lines from what our very early analyses showed. Again, an upper and a lower threshold. The different colors of the data points are defined up there at the top, and you can see that the the data points that have low yield, less than 75%, are on the lower concentrations. Between the lines, you have a few of those data points and some of the ones between 76 and 90% relative yield. But above the upper threshold, you only see soybeans that are yielding in the 90 to 100% level. So this shows promise that, we have the ability to define critical concentrations across time. So more specifically, we break that out. You see the DAR1 stands for days after R1 growth stage. N is the number of observations that falls within those number of days for the entire data set. The model is the linear quadratic model that best fit the data. The R squared, and then the predicted concentrations for 90 and 95% relative yield. So if you look at those predictions for 90 and 95% relative yield, you'll see that the K concentration in the leaflets is peaking somewhere about 3 weeks or 21 days after the onset of reproductive growth. R1 stage, when those small beans, typically, we're talking about mid and late maturity group fours, they're small, they're still growing pretty rapidly. We don't see real good relationships there. But again, K concentration is peaking when that plant is in full R2 stage, and then it is declining for the rest of the growing season. This is an example. This is not a 7-day interval, but it's a 10-day interval that I took from a previous presentation, just showing you a set of data points and a potential regression line and an R squared. So this is what each interval might look like. Then when we do that 90 and 95% relative yield, and then we plot that across time, we then have this is a cubic line here, the R squared, obviously a prediction of a prediction is pretty good. That's why eventually we'll use multiple regression analysis, I think, to define this, but this is just one of the methods. And again, you can see that anything below that lower threshold would be deemed deficient. Anything between those two lines would be deemed low, and possibly that you would see an agronomic and an economic response, and then anything above the top line would be considered sufficient. Petiole, the second tissue that we have been working with, again, basically N is the same number that we were dealing with the trifoliate leaflets. The R squareds tend to be maybe a slightly higher, to maybe just slightly lower, depending upon the phase during reproductive growth. And again, you can see that the petiole concentrations are higher in general than what we saw with the trifoliate leaflets. But they peak at the same general time. Again, this is just a depiction of the predicted 90 and 95% points with a cubic line run through them. So just to summarize here, at the end of this year, we'll have over 400 means in this data set, 10 site years. We're using the soy map to predict the R1 growth stage so that a grower or a county agent, a consultant, whoever wants to send us a sample, could send it into the lab along with the information of where he is located, the maturity group of the soybean variety, the planting date, and make sure that he tells us whether they're petioles or trifoliolate leaflets. We have ongoing studies, what I call companion studies, to identify how late in the growing season soybean will respond to potassium fertilization, and we see excellent responses all the way through R4 stage. We are even seeing positive and significant yield increases during R5, but by the time we hit R5, the responses are starting to fall off pretty quickly. The last thing, and there's a poster on this, we are using the petiole sap analysis with a new CARDI meter, and we think this will also be successful, but it will eliminate the need for the traditional plant tissue analysis. But we're just really in the first year of using this. So with that, certainly like to recognize the folks that have sponsored the research. And if I have any time, answer a question.
Thank you, Nathan. So we have just a few seconds, I will say. So I can take only one question.
Wayne.
Nathan, the difference between petiole being a transport in and out, how critical is knowing when that petiole sample was taken, where it was taken from? The leaflet is the storage vessel, but the petiole is the transport vessel. And that's always the problem we had with petiole on cotton is the nitrate could be moving in either direction, either moving in or moving out, and you didn't have a stoplight in there.
Well, certainly, I think, you know, making sure we're taking it from the proper place on the plant is going to be critical, and that's something, you know, we probably need to look at in the future is, you know, how much difference there is. But we know that as that plant matures, especially on these indeterminate soybeans, those soybean pods on the lower part of the plant are a huge draw for potassium. But, you know, I think if we have a robust data set, and I think over 400 mean values, which is well over 12 to 1,500 replicate values, we'll take out a lot of that variability, or certainly all that variability will be considered in our mean values, critical concentrations.
All right.
All right. Thank you.